Hey.
Welcome to China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Sarah Williams.
Hong Kong's leader offers to hold talks with protesters, but refuses to resign.
The United States urges restraint in the territory's protests.
We'll hear why there's both fear and euphoria among Hong Kong's protesters.
Our roundtable explores the Hong Kong crisis in depth.
And we hear how a song has become the anthem of the protest movement. Hello and welcome to China Focus.
This week we're looking at the Hong Kong protests for most of the show.
China's Communist Party has declared the pro-democracy protest to be illegal and, in a state media editorial on Friday, warned the campaign of civil disobedience is doomed to fail. Meanwhile, Hong Kong police were forced to intervene Friday after street fights broke out between the demonstrators and frustrated residents who opposed the week-long protests. VOA correspondent Brian Padden is in Hong Kong.
So I'm in the district of Mong Kok right now, and there is a big confrontation between they've called themselves workers and businessmen who are sick and tired of all the pro-democracy activists taking over the city. And there's been a lot of pushing and shoving. The anti-student protesters are trying to dismantle these structures and trying to attack the student protesters. The police are actually trying to stand in between them. The police have circled the student protesters and are protecting them. It's a very volatile situation, just these angry individuals. No one's sure who they are, where they come from.
Late Thursday night, Hong Kong's chief executive offered to hold talks between his government and pro-democracy student protesters. But Lung Chun-ying said he will not accept their demand that he resign.
Lung told a news conference that Carrie Lam would meet with the protesters.
We have studied the letter in detail, and I'm now appointing the chief secretary to represent Hong Kong government, to meet with the representatives of the Hong Kong Federation of Students to discuss constitutional development matters.
Lam said she would contact the Hong Kong Federation of Students, which requested the meeting as soon as possible.
Lung spoke just before a deadline for him to resign at midnight Thursday. The protesters had threatened to take over some government buildings if the chief executive refused to meet their demand.
Reporter Ivan Broadhead was in the crowd outside the government buildings in Hong Kong when Lung made his statement. He tells VOA Susan Yaki about the immediate reaction.
I mean, I don't believe there's any way that CY Lung would stand down or continue in office without the absolute say-so of the authorities in Beijing. So whether or not this saves face of CY Lung, I think, is a moot point. I think the broader question is, what does this mean going forward? What decision will Beijing make next? And how will that impact the people here?
And what is your guess on what's going to happen next?
I think there's a desperate hope among the authorities that this will perhaps bring a natural end to the protest. I think previous experience of demonstrations in Hong Kong would suggest that this isn't just going to stop tomorrow, that this will go on and on.
Ivan Broadhead speaking from Hong Kong late Thursday night.
This week, the tens of thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators in Hong Kong defied government demands to leave the streets of the Chinese territory. Meanwhile, Beijing has warned against foreign interference.
The protests are the worst unrest in Hong Kong since Beijing took control of the one-time British colony in 1997.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying told a news briefing in Beijing, Hong Kong is China's Hong Kong.
香港是中国的香港，是中国的一个特别行政区。
She said China firmly opposes any form of support by foreign countries for what it said were illegal protests.
Some have called the student-led protests the umbrella revolution, as demonstrators have hoisted umbrellas against the sun and as flimsy protection against the police use of pepper spray. Meanwhile, the United States is urging China to exercise restraint in Hong Kong. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins reports.
In Washington, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the U.S. is calling on both sides to exercise caution.
The United States urges the Hong Kong authorities to exercise restraint and for protesters to express their views peacefully.
He also said the U.S. has been clear in its support of Hong Kong voters in the upcoming elections.
We have been very consistent in voicing our support to the People's Republic of China for universal suffrage and for the aspirations of the Hong Kong people. And we're going to continue to do so.
At the State Department, spokeswoman Jen Psaki said the U.S. also backs the efforts of Hong Kong voters to have a say in their choice of candidates in the leadership elections.
We believe that universal suffrage and the ability of the people of Hong Kong to have a genuine choice of candidates is something that they should have. That's a concern we've expressed directly to China.
The White House declined to say if President Barack Obama will raise the issue of the Hong Kong protests during a November trip to Beijing, but said the president will state the importance of the protection of basic universal human rights. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
The demonstrations continued and the crowds grew.
Pro-democracy protesters heckled the territory's chief executive Wednesday during ceremonies to mark the 65th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China.
At a flag-raising ceremony, some activists were heard booing during the Chinese national anthem. Others turned their backs to the flag. Some yelled for Chief Executive Lung Chun-ying to step down. This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we gather experts to analyze the Hong Kong situation.
How does the Chinese government in Beijing view the continuing unrest? Hong Kong Baptist University professor Michael DeGaulier tells VOA's Victor Beatty his theories.
The central government is very concerned about populism. You have to remember in the history of China that the Cultural Revolution was basically a populist movement driven by students. And they see the threat of populism as one of the biggest threats to both governance and the Communist Party, because, you know, Mao Zedong dismantled both the civil service and the Communist Party. And so the fear of populism is a deeply ingrained one in the entire government and Communist Party of the mainland. And they had a recent incident with a man by the name of Bo Xilai, who was head of actually a fairly minor city, but it was a second-rate city, let's call this, of inner China, who used populism and corruption to build a national network of influence that was barely stopped by the bureaucracy, that literally one promotion away from becoming untouchable. And that has scared President Xi and the members of the Communist Party quite a lot. He's been charged to get out there and make sure this doesn't happen again. And the idea that they would let the richest city in China, which is Hong Kong, have a direct populist nomination and be able to put in office a person who could command the resources of Hong Kong was just unthinkable. And that's also why the central government not only came out with this harsh ruling, but it is extremely unlikely to back down.
There's been speculation in the Western media about whether the central government will put a stop to the rallies. But if the local authorities handle the demonstrations properly and stop them becoming lawless or holding the city to ransom, there will be no need. Do you consider that a veiled threat?
Not very veiled. I think there are two ways they could do this. It would be very simple for the mainland to bring Hong Kong to heel. All they have to do is simply close the land border through which most of Hong Kong's food comes, turn off the water tap, and that's most of Hong Kong's water. And if they wanted to, simply close the port. Within a week, Hong Kong people would be both hungry and jobless and thirsty, and they wouldn't have to fire a shot. And they would make a very strong point about Hong Kong being totally dependent on China.
Michael DeGaulier of Hong Kong Baptist University.
The Occupy Central protests in Hong Kong aren't just playing out on the streets. They're being felt online and on mobile phone networks. VOA's Doug Bernard watches happenings on the web for us and join me to talk about them.
Hong Kong, remember, it has probably the world's third fastest internet, I think, by UN standards. It's probably the most connected place on the planet. And because their servers and their internet connections are outside of the so-called Great Firewall, people in Hong Kong are getting awash in information and images. Interestingly, a new app has emerged. It seems like every uprising creates a new app. And in Hong Kong's case, it's called FireChat. And FireChat, in effect, allows people with mobile phones to connect with each other without any internet connection at all. You're just using your phone's Bluetooth. So if you get maybe 300, 400 people together in a space, all using FireChat, they can all talk to each other and all without any connection to the internet. So it's a conversation that can't be shut off.
Well, let's compare that with mainland China.
Right. And the comparison would be hard to be starker. China, of course, has probably the most pervasive filtering and censorship internet program that the world has seen. So China recently has begun really throttling up its blocking efforts. And they're doing it in a way that's unusual for China. Very often the Chinese authorities will try and block maybe certain articles or certain posts. It's very selective. What we're seeing now is just sort of flat out blocks. Instagram gone, pretty much all of Google gone, these kinds of things, which suggests, I think, some analysts would say, a nervousness on the part of Chinese authorities about how much information is leaking into mainland China.
So how might this all play out?
It's interesting. One analyst I spoke with said, you know, in effect, what we're seeing happening on the ground in Hong Kong, people ostensibly protesting about their democratic political freedoms. Deeply involved in that, though, is a larger sense of freedom. The people of Hong Kong see how limited information is in China on the web, and they don't want that. So these protests in some ways become as much about internet freedom and digital communications and expression as they do about this battle over whether China gets to vet political candidates or not.
VOA's Doug Bernard.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear how a song has taken the Hong Kong protesters by storm.
The pro-democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong have brought the world's attention to the territory. Joining us in our roundtable segment is Martin Flaherty, a visiting professor at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University, and James Reardon Anderson, Sun Yat-sen Professor of Chinese Studies and Senior Associate Dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. And we're also joined by Jerome Cohen, Professor at New York University School of Law and a Senior Fellow for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
I began by asking Mr. Flaherty whether the current crisis is caused by controversy over the 2017 election or by other underlying issues.
Well, certainly the immediate trigger is the 2017 election, because under the basic law, the people of Hong Kong were supposed to be able to vote for the chief executive of Hong Kong by universal suffrage. And the current dispute is about how to select the candidate. During the summer, Beijing handed down a decision that the candidates who would stand for election would be those who would be essentially handpicked by Beijing. And that has triggered the immediate protests. But there has been an erosion of some of Hong Kong's autonomy, both with regard to rights and its legal system, for quite some time. So that's one of several reasons why protests are coming to a head at this point.
Hong Kong residents have always been outspoken. They have their certainly identity and personality. Has there been a protest in Hong Kong on this scale before? And I'll ask you, Mr. Reardon Anderson.
Under the initial agreement in 1997, Hong Kong was to operate under the rubric of one country, two systems. And it's really been an ongoing question of, is this one country or is this two systems? From Beijing's point of view, they have emphasized the one country and tried to impose a uniform order insofar as they could. And for the people of Hong Kong, it's been two systems, and they've tried to maintain the autonomy and independence of their own polity and their own way of life. There have been repeated mass demonstrations in Hong Kong similar to this, but I don't think there's been anything nearly this big or this potentially unresolvable. Previous demonstrations were kind of one-offs. They were dramatic, but they were not at least potentially sustained in this fashion. So I think this one is really more likely to produce a crisis than anything that's preceded it.
Mr. Cohen, is this the greatest challenge to President Xi Jinping's rule since his presidency began?
This is a very serious one, but it's only part of a series of challenges he's got to meet, some of which he seems to have provoked or at least aggravated. He's got many domestic problems that must distract him from focusing on Hong Kong. And he has a continuing series of external foreign policy problems with his maritime neighbors. From his point of view, this is only one, but a very important one of his problems. But it's similar in some ways to the ones he faces vis-a-vis Tibet, vis-a-vis Xinjiang, and certainly Taiwan. In other words, there are many areas claimed by China where people really don't want to be ruled by the Communist Party in Beijing. And the Occupy Central movement that has been preoccupying the leadership in Beijing for many months was a kind of response to the growing concern over the failure of the Communist Party to vindicate the expectation that the people of Hong Kong in 2017 would be able to freely select their leader. And that's always been up for interpretation. There's a certain amount of ambiguity over the years over what does universal suffrage mean. Beijing is obviously imposing a meaning on it that isn't the ordinary meaning one would expect under the 1983 joint declaration between the United Kingdom and the People's Republic. There were expectations that at this point there would be genuine universal suffrage. Occupy Central was focusing on that, but not looking too strong in the way their planning was going. And this student movement, coming out of nowhere, has superseded the Occupy Central people who've been grabbing onto the tail of the student movement. It's somewhat similar to Taiwan. And Beijing now suspects there's an interaction between successful sunflower leaders in Taiwan and the student leaders in Hong Kong.
With that interaction, Professor Cohen, some observers have said that this is perhaps a leaderless movement. Is all this interaction really defining which direction it's going in, or are there, in fact, leaders behind it?
I think one of the leaders was this young man who got locked up for 40 hours, but there are others. And, of course, there's undoubtedly now negotiation going on to try to present a united front between the Occupy Central people, who themselves have differing views among them, and the various student factions. I wouldn't say it's leaderless. On the other hand, it's hardly a smooth operation, and one couldn't expect it to be in the circumstances. Despite Beijing's claim that all of this is foreign inspired by CIA and others, it's just nonsense. This is really an almost spontaneous mass reaction to a severe provocation by Beijing.
And if anything, there's a number of leaders rather than a lack of leaders. And one can argue that in part what's going on is a generational gap as well, because the students are frustrated with the lack of responsiveness of the institutions within Hong Kong. There is a legislature called the Legislative Council, but it only has, at best, an imperfect version of democratic accountability, and the chief executive essentially no democratic accountability at this point at all. And I think the student facet of these protests, which is by far the largest part that we've seen this week, reflects frustration that more normal channels of protest and more normal channels of trying to seek change through peaceful means have not been met. So it's time to attempt civil disobedience.
it might be useful to think of this in terms not just of the Chinese situation, but really of a global condition. Like the Arab Spring, these demonstrations are particularly difficult to deal with precisely because they are, if not leaderless, there is a shortage of leadership. There may be some spontaneous individuals who emerge out of the mass, but there's no clear direction. And therefore, even if one wants to negotiate with the demonstrators, it's not so clear how you do it. And so these phenomena have a kind of spontaneous life of their own that is generated by their lack of organization or lack of leadership.
That brings to mind the tremendous media coverage of this event. I've been watching some of this unfold on Twitter, and it's going crazy, you know, with by the minute there are so many reporters and students there. But bearing in mind, when you look back at the Arab Spring, that was something that Beijing wanted to avoid at all costs when a similar occurrence happening within China. Mr. Flaherty, this must be very embarrassing for the leaders of the Communist Party in Beijing.
Oh, yes, I think it's extremely embarrassing to them. And there's several ironies here, not least of which is part of the general hardening and crackdown under President Xi Jinping's regime in the last 2 years has been, among other things, to expel Western journalists from China, and many of them are now in Hong Kong, where they are now covering what is going on. But as you say, from the bottom up, the fact that in Hong Kong, because there is the emphasis on two systems and there is a guarantee of freedom of speech and association, there is Twitter, there is Facebook, there are all sorts of media platforms that are banned behind the Great Firewall of China, but are used and used robustly within Hong Kong, and you can see the results in these demonstrations.
Xi Jinping is a guy who I think believes, and perhaps with good reason, that if he compromises with the demonstrators in Hong Kong, he will be feeding the aspirations of other protesters on the mainland, and therefore is, I would say, unlikely to do anything dramatic of the type that Ma Ying-jeou did on Taiwan. This is not a leadership likely to make compromises.
But unless she shows a good deal of imaginative flexibility, I think the situation in Hong Kong can really get out of hand. So he's sort of trapped. He's got to try to walk a fine line between no compromise so people on the mainland itself don't get any ideas that rioting can get them freedom. On the other hand, if he maintains a rigid posture, things are likely to get worse in the unique situation of Hong Kong's democratic aspirants.
As I've been thinking about what he might do, one potential way would be to remove the current chief executive, who is extremely unpopular. That said, I'm not sure that simply removing the chief executive here is going to suffice. That's just one of the many demands that the students have.
Yes, I think you're right. That's a temporary palliative. I think what they really have to do is provide some opportunity for the democratic forces to nominate one of the contenders for the next chief executive. They're going to have to, without appearing to change anything that they've already sent out, they've got to interpret it in a way that will give people the feeling that they'll have a genuine choice.
Jerome Cohen, professor at New York University School of Law, Martin Flaherty, visiting professor at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University, and James Reardon Anderson, Sun Yat-sen Professor of Chinese Studies and Senior Associate Dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service.
That's a video recorded in May featuring a young girl that has gone viral on the internet. The song is titled Do You Hear the People Sing from the stage musical Les Miserables.
A volunteer wrote a Cantonese version, and it was recorded by the unnamed girl. Protest organizers had said they found it difficult finding celebrities willing to record the song.
However, Apple Daily reports that actor Stephen Au and singers Anthony Wong and Denise Ho have been seen at protest sites, and crowds have been singing the song during the demonstrations. For
From street protests to luxury shopping, it's a bit of a stretch. But the Wall Street Journal reports that luxury analyst Erwin Rombourg moved from Paris to Hong Kong in 2011. After 3 years, Rombourg put his observations into a new book called Bling Dynasty.
In it, he says the luxury landscape has changed in Asia during the past two decades, from Europeans to Japanese and now to Chinese. He says there's a big difference between Chinese and Japanese consumers.
Rombourg says the Japanese now are mainly aging women, while the Chinese are males who want to impress their corporate colleagues with gifts.
He also said China's current anti-corruption drive has affected the culture of gift-giving, with a number of presents such as watches and cognac declining.
In the meantime, we'd like to hear from you. You can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and check out our program page. It's at voanews.com/ China Focus.